and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzewski. Thanks for joining us on the program this week. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. He's in studio with us. We'd love to have your telephone calls during the next half hour. You can dial 765-496-1999. You can also email ask@wbaa.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, how are you?
I am doing super good. How about you, Stan?
Oh, just fine, thanks. Remember that you can always get a hold of any of our mayors through that email address. That's news@wbaa.org. Well, I have to tell you that I think your city now has something that that it did not have before, and that is traffic jams because of State Street.
I was going to say, don't say traffic jams.
Why? Have you heard this from other people?
I've experienced it, yeah. Actually, when we did that soft opening, remember the other day?
I do.
By the way, that was some great reporting. I've never seen somebody use that magic sound wand in a way that you did. It was almost artistic in nature.
I appreciate
cool stuff.
That, but flattery will get you nowhere.
Yes, it will.
Nor will it solve your traffic jams.
No, but it just goes to show that we have come a long way, but we still got a long way to go. There's a lot of enthusiasm about that new cool street in West Lafayette, so people are utilizing it more than what we had anticipated. And because of that, it has allowed for us to be able to sort of redirect traffic to some of the new two-way streets that are going up and down State Street, some of the connector routes to that. And that's really kind of been an odd experience. Have you had a chance to drive on those yet?
Yes, I've been all over the place. And I wanted to ask, you and I were talking before the show a little bit about the idea of sort of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. And I think just to be perfectly fair about it, there have been a few of them with respect to the State Street partial reopening. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of that. Some of them are kind of cool and some are just kind of weird. One of the first things we realize is when we have that dedicated bike trail and we traditionally sweep the streets routinely to make sure that a lot of trash doesn't get on there. And in a college community, there's a lot of really creative ways that folks dispose of stuff. And when you look
it's
at that...
It's a very nice, euphemistic way of putting that.
Yes, that's how I roll, buddy. Anyway, so the dedicated bike trail, now that it's got that curb and it's separated from the traditional traffic flow area, it becomes a gathering place, specifically when it's windy out, of a lot of that trash. And so our street guards are thinking, now, how are we going to pick that up? You can obviously have a guy walking around out there and picking it up, and it would take forever and all that. So what they've done is they've modified a leaf vacuuming machine. Mm-hmm. And so they get the leaf vac, and in the early morning hours, they drive that up State Street, and they suck all the trash out of the bike lane. Pretty creative stuff. Those guys are pretty good at what they do. The other thing is we have all the trash barrels now up and down State Street, mm-hmm. and we've got bike racks, and we're going to eventually have the decorative rail and some tables out there. And those also create challenges. And so we figure out ways to sort of make sure that that the pedestrians are going to be safe and they're protected and all that kind of stuff. But we also make sure that when it comes time to plow snow, when it comes time to empty the trash receptacles, that we can do it in an efficient and safe and effective way. And our guys are continuously looking at ways to try and improve that, because specifically with our sanitation department, Ben Anderson is our street commissioner. He does just a way cool job on doing these things. They look at creative ways to try and get that done more efficiently. Right now, the gates on the trash cans open up like a fence. There's a little locking mechanism and they swing open. And Ben is concerned about if we have a lot of snow and you push snow up against them, that you won't be able to dump them anymore. So he's looking at possibly turning them in a way so that there won't be any adverse impact from the snow. Again, creative stuff. The other thing is trying to make sure we've got some of the dual-purpose bins where you can have recycling on one side and trash on another. And we're trying to figure out a better way to make sure that we don't contaminate the recyclable side with food products or whatever else can be put in there, so that we don't sort of compromise the intent of having recycling right there on the city streets. So all kinds of different things are going on. And then the traffic areas. We have when we put in new lights at intersections that haven't been lit before, it's always good to be able to make sure that students understand that there is traffic signalization there. And then as we have done with the intersection at Northwestern and Stadium, we just have them all shoot at the same time. And that helps us get the students basically from point A to point B safely.
You mean turn on all the walk signals?
Correct.
Simultaneously?
Correct, yeah. They flash them out at the same time so the students can basically, you know, do perpendicular and do crossways and all that kind of stuff to get to where they need to be.
So let me ask you a little bit about the sort of efficient flow of traffic, be it pedestrian traffic or road traffic. There was a lot of talk as you were getting set to do this about State Street having been two-way and then going to one-way, I think, in the early 90s or something like that, and then now being back to being two-way for the duration of it. I can only imagine you guys did traffic counts on State Street in addition to all of the other work you did. Did you properly anticipate all of the traffic you were going to have when you went back to two-way from one-way? Because if you go through there in the morning or the afternoon drive periods, I mean, you literally do have traffic jams that the city did not have before.
Yeah. And well, right now it's not done yet. And I'm not saying that as a cop-out, but it is a cop-out. But it's not done yet. You know, we got to get the lights synchronized. We've got to get some of the signage up. We've got to get some of the connector routes finished off. And we also have to get things tuned up all the way from the riverfront on up and through. And that's kind of trial and error. A lot of times that has to be done. You know, you look and you time it and you see if it works great. Then you have to look at your peak traffic times, time it, and see if it works great. And we're kind of unique in that way because in a college community, you know, you have – it's not just a rush hour because you have your basic get-to-work traffic. But we have rush hours almost every hour.
Well, no, yeah, but the thing is that at – from 8 to 9 in the morning and from 4 to 6 in the evening, you have rush hour on steroids.
And so
I'm glad you mentioned synchronizing the lights because it seemed to me that that was something that had not been done yet. And I can make an argument that you maybe shouldn't do that until you have all of the lights put together because otherwise you have to go back and do it multiple times.
Oh, you got to do it again and again.
However, is there an argument now that you've seen that these traffic jams do exist that you should synchronize what you have to try and improve the flow? Because I'm certainly not the only person who has mentioned the fact that cars are not moving as efficiently through this area as they used to.
Well, sometimes we keep it that way until we're done because we still got a lot of pedestrian issues we've got to resolve. And when you have a highly densified area, you've got a lot of activity going on, there's a lot of construction going on, there's a lot of change going on, the best thing to do is wait until you're at a level of completion to start getting some of those finished, you know, issues dealt with.
I guess what I'm asking is how do you balance that as a general practice with what I think is becoming rising dissatisfaction from drivers who are going to and from the campus, especially in the mornings and in the afternoons?
Well, first off, I haven't heard a lot of complaints, and that doesn't mean that there isn't any, but they're just not coming up to my office.
That should be a reminder to everybody to call in to 765-496-1999 if you've got complaints about
State
Street.
There you go, but that would be the rest of the day. But it's because it's an in progress project. We're still trying to get things worked out, and we've done this before. We've done a lot of infrastructure work. We've done some resurfacing work on Salisbury, where we have basically that same concentration of traffic at odd hours of the day, and it does take time. It takes time to get things worked out. Our city engineer and our traffic guys are doing a lot of work and doing a lot of observation on what is going and how traffic's flowing, and the eventuality is that once we get all this squared away, not just in that downtown area in West Lafayette, but all the way out to 231, the traffic flow will be much more smooth.
So let's talk just a little bit more about you know, where this goes from here. I wondered if you'd been keeping up with all of the costs of the change orders to this project over the course of time. And for people who don't know, over the last several months, the Board of Public Works has been approving these change orders, which are typically tend to be little things in terms of how the road is constructed or the amenities along it. And each of them has a price tag. And so this started out as a $120 million project. Have you been keeping track of how much the change orders have added to that price tag?
Really, the change orders... There is a when you look at how this public private partnership has worked, everything's done up front. So a lot of if we have a change order in there, it could be and again, I don't know specifically which ones we're actually talking about. We actually can go in there, and if we want to make a particular modification, we'll put that on our dime. So that's not necessarily a change order in effect, because it's not something that's being changed with the project, but it's something that we might want to modify with the project. The other thing is because this was already prepaid, a lot of those change orders don't necessarily go through the Board of Works. It goes through the Joint Board. And in that event, that could be hypothetically if something just doesn't work as planned. If we look at an intersection and I don't know, there's some physical reason why we can't do something that we want to do with it, or we look at a potential development, or we have some specific traffic designs for a believed development that's going to go in a specific area, and it doesn't. Those kind of things we work out every month at the Joint Board, and that's the board that's made of Westside folks and Purdue folks, and they make that call. The Board of Works, generally what that does is it validates local roads and streets that are currently under construction outside of the State Street project. And a lot of those, yeah, that we do. We're doing a community crossings project in Wabash Shores up in the north end near the New Burtsfield School. And we encounter a lot of circumstances and situations there where we have to do change orders.
Well, the point is that no matter which board that those go through, mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about, you know, kind of it for the in the scope of a $120 million mm-hmm. project, it seems like nickel and diming, but a million here and a million there, and eventually you're talking about real money in terms of what's being added to this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, is anybody paying attention to
the total
amount of extra dollars that either you're having to pay out of your mm-hmm. own pocket or whatever that are going into what was already the most expensive project in city history?
Oh, yeah. It's in the area history, that to say the least. But, yeah, we keep a track on everything because every bill – has to be paid. Every change order has to be approved. And again, the change orders are done within the understanding of the scope of money that's being applied. Because remember, and again, I don't want to be repeating myself, but it was paid for up front. And then, you know, the construction companies that came in to do the work are doing the work. That's what makes change orders somewhat of a challenge in some cases. But obviously, if it's something that has to be done, we do it. And if there's a need to go through another a local board or commission, then, yeah, we're going to definitely keep track of it.
Let me get to a question that's come in from Michael, who wrote us since you were last on the show. He says, is there a chance that West Lafayette will follow the lead of Bloomington's mayor's embrace of solar energy for city installations and give encouragement for citizens to take advantage of state incentives that will expire at the end of December 2017?
Yes.
All right. So how do you plan to do that?
We currently are working very cooperatively with the Research Park. There's a lot of development that's going out there, and that's where we have a ton of available green space. And the potential is strong for us to look at putting actually a solar farm out there. And that would be the first. The second is that excuse me. Second thing we're looking at is we're looking at doing some incentivization just here locally within the community. And for folks that would choose to, for instance, try and get more solar power to their business or even in some cases to their home, to provide some guidance to that as well.
When you say guidance, do you just mean instruction on how to do it properly, or are there actually like monetary incentives you can offer?
There are grants being offered to communities throughout the state of Indiana. The good news is that there are grants. The bad news is they're very competitive right now. In some cases, there doesn't seem to be a lot of support for local governments pursuing grants for solar energy. I don't know why that is. But it's something that West Lafayette, we've always been encouraging. Anything that we can do to lower our energy costs and you know, kind of minimize our carbon footprint, we're all about. And solar energy is one of those things that we can do.
You know, you got to put up a new city hall at some point. You know, solar roof, green
roof.
Oh,
yeah.
You should do all that.
Sure. We'll be all about that. I mean, that would be one way to help cut the cost. That's for sure.
Right. So when are you going to get a new city hall?
Geez, Stan, what a great question. We have just recently contracted with a firm to start that process. We're doing the aquatics and the rec center on the north end. And we're going to have a firm do that, what they call the sensing sessions, and to try and get an idea of what City Hall is nowadays, where it needs to be.
You just put your office in the lap pool at the Aquatic Center.
I could do that. I could just put it right here, man. We could be the new Bob and Tom.
Hey, you know? If we can charge you rent and
generate, you can charge me
but,
rent.
You know, it'll help with the member drives, like the ones that are starting tomorrow.
Yeah,
you know?
Hey, and remember, I'm in. So.
Okay, good. So, but still, I mean, in terms of those sensing sessions, when do those start? What kind of input will people get to give?
Right now, we're waiting. We have to get the proposals back from the consultants that are going to apply for it. It's a selective process. We put the bids out there. People go ahead and submit to the bids, and then we go through and do a ranking system on who's best, who's worst, and then we go through a public process of selecting a bidder. Then they go ahead and write a proposal.
When would you like to have those public hearings start?
Oh, man, as soon as possible.
Can you give me, like, sometime in 2018?
Yes. Well, sometime in 2017, I hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it can be done that quickly?
Yes, it can.
All right.
I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. I mean, you look at things, what people have done. You look at their work experience. You look at what they know about your community. And it's a pretty easy choice to make.
Reminder that if, like Michael, you've got a question, you can always email that to ask@wbaa.org. You can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter or call us, 765-496-1999. So Purdue has announced its plans to expand beer and wine sales at its athletic events. And that became really interesting because now you've got these permanent lights atop Ross-Ade Stadium, the football stadium, which are going to get used for the first time tomorrow night for the football game. But it brings up an interesting question for you, I think, and your police force. In recent years, you've seen fewer and fewer police calls, fewer and fewer arrests than used to be seen historically. But now you've got a Friday night football game with increased access to alcohol on the premises of the football game. How are you and your police force preparing for that?
Well, those guys are experts at it. Being, you know, police officers in a college community where there's the ebb and flow of drinking based upon the day of the week it is, they've been doing that a long time. And
it's my understanding that on college campuses, Friday night is a fairly good drinking time.
Actually, Thursday night, for some reason, seems to be the high-end night, too. And our guys work really well with the Purdue Police Department, and they both have been very professional in how they address that. But one of the things that we really feel is important is, and this sounds almost counterintuitive, when you look at the available drinking establishments that we have in the near campus area in downtown West Lafayette, there's so few. And on any given night, well, hypothetically, I mean, actually any given night on the weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, those places are absolutely packed. They're packed so much that the kids are they're sort of rolling out into the streets, and it does create a problem. One of the things that we're hopeful for is we're hopeful to be able to work closely with our legislators and possibly get the option of expanding our riverfront district. Now, what that means for us in West Lafayette is that the mayor is in cities that have riverfront districts is allowed to grant liquor license, signatory authority to grant liquor licenses. And what that means is that with certain restrictions, there would be options for having more drinking establishments in the near Wabash River area. And in conversations that we've had with our counselors and conversations we have with our staff and conversations that we have with our police officers, it seems that that might be a better approach to it. I know it seems counterintuitive, but it seems like it would be a better approach. Now, again, there's very strict qualifications as to what would actually empower somebody to be awarded one of those liquor licenses.
But you sound like broadly you are pro bar in this instance.
Well, yeah, and but understand why. You know, if there's more establishments, there's less crowding, there's less potential for fights, less potential for harm and danger, and there's more opportunities for control. And you know, we had a meeting with the Bar Coalition late last month, and that's something that in a college community needs to be done. When you pack 300 kids into one single establishment and you're just serving beer as quick as you can in plastic cups, how do you regulate that? How do you monitor that? How can you keep control of that? And what would happen if there's a fire, and what happens when there's a fight? I mean, those are real concerns for us because that's putting our college population at risk. And we feel if you can dilute that population base by offering up more opportunities, then hopefully it'll be a safer environment.
So what is the timeline on that? How quickly would you need or would you want somebody and to go through all those intermediate steps until you get that signatory authority on those liquor licenses?
It's hard to say. I mean, you're talking about dealing with legislative issues. You're talking about making sure that all the right boxes are checked. It's hard to say. Eric Carlson, our director of development, is working very diligently on this. He's got my full support, and hopefully our next show we'll have more information.
We've got about 10 minutes left with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis on this program. You can call 765-496-1999, email ask@wbaa.org, or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter if you've got questions for him. So we reported where your police chief, Jason Domkowski, has decided he's going to run for county sheriff. He's going to at least be in the GOP primary election in May against the incumbent Republican sheriff, Barry Richard. Handicap for me that matchup, because these are guys you've worked with, both of them.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you know... Okay, you know, I'm going to put a warning out there. You know, this is going to be some crass political response at first, but I'll get into more details later. So for those of you that don't want to hear the politics, turn the radio off now. They're both good guys. You know, I've worked with Barry for 20 plus years in the Lafayette Police Department when I was over there, and I've worked with Jason very closely now for over 10 years here in West Lafayette. They're both good guys, and they both have, you know, public safety, you know, as their number one priority.
That said, you have picked a side.
Yes, I have. I am a strong supporter of Jason Domkowski because, again, I've watched him grow, and he's done a lot to keep things professional. He is really, you know, he's got a graduate degree. He's been to all the appropriate schools, the FBI National Academy, Northwestern School of Police Administration, and he's done a lot of really good things for our community. He's a very you know, he thinks not just about what's immediately the problem. You know, he thinks about not just, you know, the quick fix. He's very programmatic in his approach to making sure that the community is a safe community. He works very cooperatively with all groups. He's not a, you know, political hack. His focus is trying to make sure that the community is safe. And he is one of those guys that can actually bring people together. And in law enforcement, that's kind of hard. You know, when you're wearing a uniform or you've got, you know, a badge on your chest or a gun on your hip, there's a lot of folks that are immediately alarmed by your presence. And Jason has a very calming effect when it comes to, you know, making sure people understand what's in their best interest. And more importantly, he's been a chief for 10 years. And he inherited a police department that was under a lot of stress. And he went through a very methodical process of making sure that the issues that needed to be addressed were addressed immediately. He trained and basically groomed a lot of staff to put in command positions. And he met with so many different groups within the city of West Lafayette to find out what they want from their police department. And that's exactly the kind of guy that needs to be a sheriff.
So you have said on this program before, in talking about other races that you could have made endorsements in, you have said that you tend to be very careful about that, and we have noticed that you tend to take a little while to think about that in many cases. Some of the endorsements we've talked to you about have come within the last month or so before Election Day. This one happened within a week of the announcement of Chief Domkowski's candidacy. That seems like a departure from your typical course of action.
It really is. I mean, you know, a lot of times when you're looking at endorsing somebody, it's one of those things that you might have the you know, a casual acquaintance with him. But Jason's not just a coworker. He's also a friend. And I know him very well. And I know his family. And I know how he was raised. And I know some of the challenges that he personally has overcome. And I know he's got a great deal of integrity. And I know he really believes in professional law enforcement.
So let me ask you what this means. Because what you've got here is you've got a Republican primary for sheriff. Mm-hmm. It's an office that the GOP already holds in the county. And typically, when you have someone, an incumbent office holder who's thinking about running for re-election, and I don't know that Sheriff Richard has officially said that he's running for re-election yet.
I haven't heard yet.
But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that he is. When you have a primary challenge from within your own party, that is typically a message that there is some portion of that party that is unhappy with how their prior elected official is handling that job. What do you think it says? You've said both of these guys are good guys, you think. What do you think it says that there's going to be at least this primary challenge for an office that the Republicans could likely hang on to no matter who they put up?
You know, I don't... That's one of the things about police stuff versus just the general political stuff. You know, it's a very specialized field where experience sometimes supersedes political affiliation. And in other ways, the reputation of your leadership or the reputation of your enforcement authority supersedes politics also. So in this particular case, I think it's less politics and more operational. You know,
Is that a criticism of the way that Sheriff Richard has handled the department?
Yeah, a little bit, but not. But
why,
not.
Why
not,
so?
Well,
and
the reason being, okay, you're going to ask me to put on my police hat, and it's 10 years old. At least it's been in the closet for 10 years, so I'm speaking a little out of school here. It's not necessarily a criticism of Barry as a human being. Barry is a good guy, and he's done a lot of good things for the community, specifically over in Lafayette. There have been a lot of challenges that have been basically presented to Barry in his leadership role. And I think Barry handled him as good as he could have, as well as he could have. But Barry had a lot of – he had very limited experience in being a police executive. On the Lafayette Police Department, he spent 20-plus years as a DARE officer. And that made him very prepared to be kind, very prepared to understand how to deal with certain circumstances involving our youth, how to make sure that there's applications to keep kids, you know, behaving positively. But he didn't have a lot of exposure to being an administrator. He didn't have a lot of leadership training. And some of that came through with some of the challenges that were presented to him in his first term so far as sheriff.
Are you saying you think there are mistakes that he's made that mean that somebody else should hold that job for the next 4 years?
Well, what I'm saying is that there were challenges presented to Barry that, based upon his limited experience, possibly could have been handled better. But having said all that, it's like anything. You know, if somebody's going to run for an office, usually what happens is the public is the one that makes the choice. And I have never seen somebody who has just said, look at my resume. My resume is better than this person's resume. But in this particular case, if you value education, if you value leadership experience, you can see that Jason has the edge. Is that a criticism of Barry? I don't know. I mean, you can't necessarily criticize somebody because of their lack of experience because he hasn't had those options. But I just know what Jason's done. I know what he's capable of. And I know that he would make a great sheriff.
One more thing. In our last minute or so, we haven't had a chance to get your reaction yet to the county health department beginning to host a needle exchange every Friday. You had said you didn't want one particularly operating in your city. You had claimed you didn't think there was a need for one in West Lafayette. Are you okay with how it has transpired so far, which we should say, I guess, includes a location that right now is very near to a bridge that leads into your city?
Yeah. I still have the same reservations about the needle exchange program that I've always had. You know, I think it needs to be more regulated. You know, it needs to be an actual active exchange program, and it shouldn't just be where you hand out a bunch of needles and hope to get some back. But having said that, it'll be interesting to see what the volume is. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We've had some data that we looked at just the other day on the frequency of ambulance runs in regards to overdoses. And it still rings true that the concentration, almost to the point where it's almost exclusively over in the area where the needle exchange program is. So I think that they've probably got their location correct. But I still feel that there's a lot of issues that need to be resolved with the concept of a needle exchange program to begin with.
Okay. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we have for this show. As always, we appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to doing it again next month.
I'll be here.
All right. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Don't forget, you can find all of these programs archived at our website, WBAA.org, and you can send questions for any of our mayors at any time to our email address, ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.